Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. This is Tommy Brown with College Life Engagement, the show that talks about college students and college life and how they can engage in their life for success in college. My name is Tommy Brown, and I am a life coach working with students on their journey into, through, and beyond college. And I'm very excited about today's show. My guest is Lisa Kerr, who is Associate Dean for Enrollment at Auburn University Montgomery. And today's show is College Life Engagement from a Dean's Perspective. Lisa works with students at Auburn University Montgomery, and we're actually working together putting together with our colleague Dana Sutton a retreat that hopefully will become a model for leadership retreats that can happen around the country for students. And so, Lisa, welcome today. It's very good to have you on the show.
Thank you, Tommy. It's great to be here.
You want to tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do at Auburn University Montgomery and past roles, those sorts of things.
Sure, great. I appreciate that. Primarily my role at Auburn University Montgomery relates to student success and the retention initiatives that we have here on this campus. During the past 2 years, we've really intentionally looked at what we're doing on our campus to help support the academic, personal, and professional development of our students. And so we've done a lot of focus groups with the students, deans, faculty members, and then look at what's done best practice-wise around the country and what research shows us works well, and then are looking to implement various aspects of those things here on our campus. And then also just really work to serve and support the growth of programs and initiatives that we already have on. So that's what we're doing here at AUM. Past experiences, I've worked at community colleges and a bunch of different schools around the country, and everything from academic advising to residential life, just playing my career in higher ed and loving every minute of it.
Great. Yeah, that's what I love about you and why I'm excited to have you as a guest is because you obviously have a passion and a love for the work that you do with students and for the students that you're working with. And I'm interested to find out is what you're involved in, especially with the issues you work with and that you mentioned in your introduction, are universities and colleges around the country putting a lot of effort into these things that you're talking about?
Yeah, definitely. And there has been, when looking at student success and retention specifically, it's a fairly young field of study within higher education. And young, I say, and that we have a lot of research just going back about 40 years. Now, you can go all the way back to the Oxford model and to Harvard and some of the very well-established institutions. And they have been doing things that we focus on today for student success and retention. They've been doing these for years. But the research really didn't take off a lot until about 50 years ago and then forward to now. But there are a lot of institutions across the country who are really putting a much greater emphasis on focusing on how do we support our students in helping them to reach that ultimate goal of graduation, to persist from that first semester all the way through. And so it's fun. It's a young field, but it has such purpose and meaning because you're helping these students who come in with dreams. Everybody comes to college with the expectation that they're going to graduate, or they wouldn't start, right? And unfortunately, we have seen so many don't make it. So it's really, really exciting to be able to work with these students who have the dreams and to help them actualize those. Say, this is what you want. Here's how to be successful. Here's how you can get there.
So what it sounds like is that the definition you're using for the success is graduation. Is there more to, from your experience, for what makes a successful college student?
You bet. There are levels of success. Graduation is one of the ways that the institution as a whole, that we can really dictate that a student has succeeded from our perspective. It's a way that we can quantify the success. But a student rate of success is dependent upon what their goals are. So for some, it's coming back to college. Maybe they've come a while before and they're just getting back into it to gain more skills or more knowledge about a specific area. For some, it's just an opportunity that they're thinking, I'm not sure if I want a college degree, but I'm going to check it out. And success for that student is giving it their all and saying, okay, So there are a lot of different ways that you can measure success, but I think traditionally when you hear colleges talk about student success, they're really talking about supporting those students towards the ultimate outcome of graduation.
Yet there, and this is not necessarily the things we talked about on the questions, but this question's coming up for me about success. Is it always successful or the right thing for a student to be in college, or at that particular college, or is it the right? Is it successful? Is one definition or quantifiable success for one student the same as for another? I know that graduation is a marker, but are we also, do colleges have a responsibility, do students have a responsibility, and parents have a responsibility to think about success in a broader sense than just making it to that moment where they graduate?
Yeah, I would reply with an emphatic yes. I think the college experience is much more than going to class and getting a degree. I think that it is an experience. And so, in past conversations, and I've been known to say this to students at AUM as well as other institutions I've worked at, the school that you go to, it's critical for it to be the right fit. And really student success begins from the college perspective, it begins with making sure that the students that we're enrolling into our colleges and universities, that this is the right place for them to be. Success as a student, if we take this out of the picture of just for college, but as a human being, success is doing what you're meant to do, finding your purpose and fulfilling that. And for some, the college degree process is critical to that. For others, it is not. And so it's a matter of really, there's that personal level of success of, is this what I'm supposed to be doing and is this right for me? And that's really, really important for students and for their parents, their supporters and their loved ones to have that conversation before you get into college or as you're going through college to determine if it's the right place for you. Because success, that's a big word. It can mean a lot of different things. And I think in order to be successful in college, the student has to want to be there, and they have to be willing to put in the time and energy and the effort to do so. So it's not a one college fits all. It's not a blanket statement of you have to finish towards graduation. What's critically important is I think you will likely get to graduation if you're in the right place, if you surround yourself with the folks that can help to support you in that, and if you keep yourself grounded in understanding why you're there and what the ultimate goal is.
So as your role is Associate Dean for Enrollment at AUM, first I'd love to hear a little bit more about AUM and what type of school it is, what type of students you're working with, and secondly, what AUM is doing and your involvement to support student success, both in its definition of getting to graduation but also then the broader definition of success that you were talking about.
Sure. AUM is a fantastic institution. Obviously, I'm a bit biased, but it's really fun. We're growing in a lot of ways. We're young, and we are situated in the east side of Montgomery in Montgomery, Alabama, and we are sistered up with Auburn University, the Auburn campus in Auburn, Alabama, and we We have a variety. I mean, check us out on online, www.aum.edu, and you can see all of the degrees and programs that we have to offer. But we are a urban campus in the sense that we're affiliated with Montgomery, but we are a small, personalized Warhawk Nation that really serves to work with students individually. And I know that sounds very cliché-ic, but it is a place where I've had so much fun watching as we're working through our new strategic plan and the dynamic movement and the energy that's on this campus right now that's really, truly focusing on making sure that as we grow, we retain that part of personalization in our mission and that our students continue to be and to understand that they are our measure of success as a university. Mm. Specifically, some of the things that we have around 5,000 students, undergraduate students right now, and then we have master's programs and a couple of joint doctoral programs with Auburn in the primary campus in Auburn. So, and we have residential housing on campus, so there is that opportunity for students as well. And, you know, the sports, the athletics, we have a lot of the traditional things that students are looking for in a regional, but we're smaller so that it's a personal, it's a family. It's the Warhawk Nation. it's
right.
Fun. So specifically, like, what are we doing here at AUM to help support students? One is really making sure through our orientation programs and our recruitment and admission processes that students are aware of, this is the university, this is who we are, this is what we have to offer, do you feel like this is going to be a great place for you? And we have those conversations from the very beginning. And I think most institutions do that. So it's really important as students and families look to try to find where should my child go to college so that they can, you know, really get the most out of it. Take the time to ask the questions that are personal to you, not just faculty-student ratio or what's on, I mean, what do they serve in the cafeteria? I mean, find out all the detailed little questions that you may think aren't important. If they're important to you, then they're important in the success process for your student. So really looking and revamping some of our orientation programs, looking to put into place opportunities where parents can stay connected to the campus in ways that will allow them to be knowledgeable about what's going on the campus, to be able to support their students without interfering with their students' college experience. And that's a critical piece there, because when students come to college, it's important for them to have their experience. We are all so connected now, today, in many different ways, and I think parents are a lot more involved in the college student, in their student's experience, in their child's experience. But for the student to really gain the most and to be most successful in growing and learning, they kind of need to be doing that on their own. So we're looking at that as one of the bigger pieces of the student success component. How can we make it so mom and dad can still be involved in this campus and know how to and when to and what to do to support the student, but not interfere with the student's development and natural progression of becoming that complete independent adult? So there are those pieces. Then specifically for academic components, we have orientation classes. So students, when they come in, they're required to take a course that really helps them to practice some of the skills that they probably heard about or learned about in high school or in their homeschooling community or wherever they're coming to us from. They've probably heard about these things, but they haven't necessarily practiced them at the level we want them to have in college. So we have transition classes that students take. We also have a new area on our campus that's called the Warhawk Academic Success Center. And within that space, it's housed in our library. We have tutoring, so if students are struggling in their classes, come get free tutoring. You know, they don't pay anything extra for that, and tutoring is available there, one-on-one, personalized tutoring attention. We have success advisors, so if students have a question and they're not quite sure who to ask or where to go to, they can come to the, you know, the WASC, we call it, the Warhawk Academic Success Center, and ask those questions. And there are faculty here and staff here that are, their primary focus is just to answer those questions, to help the students get connected in that way. You know, in academic advising, some of the more traditional foundational pieces, we're really working to integrate those all together. So there's a seamless connection among all these support services. So students can ask, go to one place, ask the questions, and then get referred to the specific areas that they need. So those are some of the ways that we're really working.
Yeah, and which is interesting. I read this week part of the I guess conversation, ongoing conversation about the expense of higher education these days and the increasing costs. And I guess it was in the Chronicle of Higher Education, I think, an article about the increasing levels of student support services, exactly what you're talking about.
Exactly.
But there is a cost to that, whereas, you know, 50 years ago, 40 years ago, 30 years ago, when parents were in college, if they were in college, and we hear this from out in the buzz world, that why does college cost so much? Why are there so many administrators? And the things you're talking about do cost money. Is there pressure, I guess, to provide services and support for students that are expected or for success and not? Why can't faculty do these things? Why can't why can't others do these things? Yeah.
I think if we look in the big picture, and this is kind of a big picture historical theoretical conversation, so to speak, but when higher ed was first invented, you know, when you're looking back prior to the GI Bill, access was limited. We did not, it was very much a privileged opportunity to go to college. And thankfully, the United States has progressed past that and allowed a lot of individuals a greater amount of access to college, to university, to be able to improve upon their own success in life or their meet their aspirations. As soon as you start opening up college, then you provide the access. If we have, as institutions are going to open up our doors and say, yes, you are welcome here, then we have a responsibility as an institution to ensure that those students, if we're going to accept them, that we provide them with the opportunity to succeed. Otherwise, we're just creating a revolving door as opposed to an opening door. And these students come in, they're not prepared. They don't have the family support system because nobody's been through it before. They don't understand what they're getting into. They come in, they rack up a lot of debt, or they pay a lot of money. They spend their life savings on that, and they're not successful, and they walk out the door. And what have we done as higher ed to really, truly help society? That's not helpful. So if we're going to open the doors, then I believe as an institution, we ought to provide the resources to support students to do that. So yes, it is a little bit more expensive, but it's the right thing to do. And so there is a lot of conversation. Why can't faculty do this? Some do. And I think that a lot of faculty do care. But, you know, in the argument for the faculty, yes, they can do this, but faculty also have their priorities and what they're doing, and they already work very hard. They are teaching. They are keeping up on their research to be able to provide the students with the content and give them the skills and the knowledge that they need to move forward. So, yes, faculty can do some academic advising, and a lot do. And even if they're not the official advisor for the students, are they providing advising and mentorship? Oh, my goodness, yes. Faculty at an institution like AUM and a lot of good institutions around the country, they're not in this job for the glory of it, and they're definitely not in the job for the paycheck of it. They're in the job because they want to help and make that difference. So to add more onto a plate for somebody who's already really stretched and really giving of their time and doing so in a very authentic way, I think is unfair, and I think that would diminish the quality of the services provided. So again, it's not the faculty aren't willing or the faculty can't, they don't have the skills, but you can't ask one person to serve in the roles of 15. You know, mm-hmm. maybe you have to make sure to ensure the quality of what's out there. So a lot of these services aren't just to support the success of the student, but it's also to provide the faculty with the opportunity to focus on and to be the best faculty and instructors, educators that they can be as well. And therefore, then you have the bigger picture, the institution is much more successful. Does it cost
you've got
money?
An interesting,
sure.
Yeah. So you've got an interesting dynamic, fascinating dynamic playing out in higher ed right now where
right.
the pressure is to reduce costs, but yet the pressure is to make it accessible for everybody, which means
right.
you have to provide more services. So, you know, schools and the shift that's happening in education right now and the fact that you're an associate dean for enrollment, I'm sure you feel a lot of that pressure.
Oh, yes.
At AUM.
The budget comes up frequently. You know, it really does. But, you know, again, it's really important. If you go back to, you know, historically, why does higher ed exist?
Uh-huh.
In really, the purpose of this institution is to help individuals and for the betterment of society. And so you have to constantly, we are constantly weighing, doing what is right and what is necessary in order to keep, you know, the progress moving forward. Higher ed is not a money-making entity. It's non-profit. We don't make money. Now, there
mm-hmm.
are schools that are for-profit,
mm-hmm.
and how those bottom lines work is very, very different. But we don't make a profit. We are education. And so there are a lot of, yeah, there's a lot of pressure on, is this working? Are, you know, by these new services that we're providing, are we seeing that students are being more successful? Are they persisting towards college longer? Are our graduation rates increasing? Those are all factors. But when it comes down to it, when that student is sitting across the desk from you and you're having a conversation about their life, and I tell this with my staff all the time,
mm-hmm.
as a team, we understand we are changing the world one student at a time. And
mm-hmm.
that's the priority. And, you know, I don't know how that student's going to go and then impact the world in a positive nature. That's yet to be seen. But, yeah, there's a lot of pressure. And it is expensive. However, it can be done in ways where it doesn't have to be over-the-top expensive. Your most,
mm-hmm.
you know, the biggest expense is the salary. I mean, your best asset is your people, right? So
right.
hiring good people, and you find the ones that are passionate about this as well, and it's amazing the work that can get done.
Thanks. And thank you for your work there at AUM. I hear your passion coming across, and it excites me. Book I wanted to talk about. Are you familiar with Generation on a Tightrope, Arthur Levine and Diane Dean's book?
I'm not greatly familiar, but a little bit since you mentioned it, I've been doing a little research. But
and it just offers this basic thesis, and you talk about, you know, how much the world is changing and how these students have to be prepared for this changing world.
Right.
And it this book specifically looks at this generation as on a tightrope between a world that they may or may not be aware that they're going to be graduating into, and institutions or systems such as government schools that you and I work at that are slow or even resistant to change, policymakers that are resistant to change. What's your response to, I guess we've talked a little bit about that, but any other thoughts on how perhaps the students themselves might be engaged in that conversation, or we as college professionals might be involved in that conversation on the bigger picture?
Yeah, I think as I was looking into kind of this thesis a little bit, there are a few competing issues, I think. I think in part that they're right on in saying that, you know, the world is changing, yet higher ed is slow to keep up with that change. And I think in some ways that is true. However, I also think it's critically important that instead of having society dictate how higher ed should function in terms of students want things faster, students need things this way, you know, why are we so slow to this, why are we so slow to that, I think it's important for us to also remember what is it that these employers are wanting out of our graduates when they get out. Some of those basic skills, that's where the structure or their function comes in. Are we preparing students based on what they expect, or do we need to prepare students based on what their employers need them to be able to do? Yes, employers need them to have specific skills. And that is where I think there's a very big differentiation between your technical schools and your liberal arts-based schools and your colleges and universities. There is nothing wrong with going to school to learn a specific trade or a specific skill set and then taking that into your chosen field and learning the additional knowledge and wisdom that you need within that field to move up that way. That is a great way. That is, again, it comes to fit. That works for people. That's critically important. But then if you're looking for a career path that requires different skills, when you're talking about the critical thinking skills, you're talking about problem solving, creative solution skills, those skills don't happen overnight. That's not I'm going to feed you a piece of information and now you know it, you can do it. Those are skills that through an educational process, they need to be just that, processed. They need to be practiced. And we can't lose track of that. If we're so, as a society, outcome-oriented, I get that. The bottom line matters, the products matter. But you don't get to an end product without a process being involved to get there. And I think far too frequently we are looking only at that outcome and not attending to the processes that are going on behind. So if our students come out with just a very specific, tight set of skills, they have knowledge to do A, B, and C, then that's all they're going to be able to do. But higher ed is still devoted to and dedicated to these students so that the students can understand the content of A, B, and C, but then have practiced the skills to be able to take A, B, and C, put it in a blender, mix it all up, come out with something new, and really contribute to their field. So it's more than developing, it's more than getting a student to the end line with a degree so they can get a job. It's about developing an individual so that they can begin what will be a fruitful career. And it's really important, I think, that we balance both of those. The students have to have the skills to be able to live in their fast-paced environment today and keep up, yes. Mm-hmm. But are we trading the fast-paced, you know, tidbits of information for true knowledge and experience? And to be honest, I don't know that I want higher ed to change away from that foundational. Actually, I know that I don't want higher ed to change away from that foundational understanding of we're providing you with skills for a lifetime, not just skills for a job. Excellent. And so I look at that thesis and I was like, ooh, there's so much here and we could have an entire, you know, couple of conversations
on it,
based on that. Yeah. You know, but I think that it's accurate yet incomplete. I think that's how I would you know, really pull it together. Yes, it's true.
Great.
We are sometimes slower.
We're going to take a break.
We're going
to take a quick break, come back to some more of this conversation. Lisa Kerr is my guest. She's the Associate Dean for enrollment at Auburn University Montgomery, and we're talking about college students from college life engagement from a dean's perspective. This is Tommy Brown. I'm the host of College Life Engagement on the Life Coach Radio Network on Blog Talk Radio. and some upcoming shows. I invite, if listeners want to call in first and join the conversation, the number is 646-716-9397, and you're welcome to join the conversation. Upcoming on Life Coach Radio Network later this week is, or in, you find the shows that are coming up on demand. There we go. Spiritually Speaking with Reverend Jen. Jen is a friend of mine. She's a wonderful life coach. That's tomorrow evening at 8 p.m. And then Fund Fortune Entrepreneur Startup Success, Entrepreneur Startup Success Fit Factory. That's on Tuesday at 12. On the sister station, the Life Coach Chat Channel, today, upcoming broadcasts, How to Avoid Exhaustion, Overwhelm, and Breakdown at Home and Work. That's tomorrow at noon. To be or not to be, that is the question. That's another conversation on the Life Coach Chat Channel. It's a group of coaches who offer that. And that To Be or Not to Be show is Tuesday at 8 p.m. On our third station, on the International Life Coach Radio, upcoming broadcast, Satisfying Careers in Show Business, tomorrow at 6 p.m., and Balanced Life with FIT, 10 Secrets to a Juicy Love Life. That sounds good. Tuesday at 1 p.m. Those are all available on Blog Talk Radio, the International Life Coach Radio, Life Coach Chat Channel, and Life Coach Radio Network. We invite listeners to listen for those, check those out, and also to call in again at 646-716-9397. Continuing my conversation with Lisa Kerr. Lisa, one of the things, I guess, in my own teaching and what you were talking about earlier is that I'm much more interested in engaging a student's curiosity and getting them around to asking questions rather than, I think, what I perceive is, I guess, the standardized testing approach has been to what is the right answer. And I work to encourage my students to be curious and to get engaged in inspiring learning. But it's hard when that objective is employment, getting the degree, getting the right job. Is it possible, I guess, to both educate, inspire, and prepare for viable employment? And I think that's what you were talking about. But some more about how do we inspire students? And how are you inspiring students that you work with or that you and your colleagues work with at AUM to see this more broadly than just getting the grade, getting the job kind of thinking?
Sure. I think not only is it possible, I think it's required. I think that, okay. That you know, I mean, and I agree with you, it's not easy. It's very challenging, but you know, teaching, educating at any level, it's not for wimps. Like, if this is not a profession you go into to just relax and go with the flow. If you're going to do it right and you're going to make that difference, it takes a lot of heart and energy to do that. So I do think it's possible. I think that, you know, good professors and good teachers are okay with their students not liking them from time to time. You have to understand that, you know, it's not easy. And I think that, you know, there are those times sometimes where it's you just ask the question and you have to just let it hang in the air and let the student struggle with it. And awkward silence can be beautiful because the students need to struggle with. They need to come up with their own answer and their own understanding of what's going on. If we are only continue to teach them to only rely on their references and their resources as opposed to their own ingenuity, intellect, and ability to solve and create, then we're going to be in a whole world of hurt 30 years from now when we have a society that is full of people who can do based on what other people are saying but can't come up with the solutions on their own. Because I mean, it just would be really sad. So I think it's critical. I think it's required and important. And what do we do for that? It's vitally important that we create safe spaces where students can feel successful and okay and valid making mistakes. Labs. I mean, you have labs. Everyone thinks of labs in chemistry. You know, you have a lab, you go in, you mix things up, they blow up, okay, no big deal. You clean up the mess, you go back, and you try to figure out how it works again. Or anatomy, you know, you're looking specifically at something, and you're cutting things open, you're dissecting it, you're pulling it apart, and it gets messy, and it's stinky, and it's gross. And, you know, everyone's okay with those in the physical or biological sciences. Well, what we're doing at AUM, and I think a lot of other good institutions, is you're allowing the entire university to be a learning lab. You provide students with opportunities to engage in activities, to take that content that they're working inside of the classroom with, do research on it with a faculty member, to really wrestle with it and to understand, how do I apply this? What does it mean? What is that so what factor? Within student affairs, you have, you know, extracurricular activities, co-curricular activities. Within athletics, how do you put some of these content that people are learning in kinesiology or in, you know, their exercise science classes, how do they put that to use? I think what allows students the opportunity to dive in, make mistakes in a safe way, recoverable mistakes. We really do try to keep some guardrails up to make sure that they're not getting in over their head. But provide an environment where students are comfortable asking uncomfortable questions. Create learning opportunities where students can practice the skills, get it wrong, learn from that, and then get it right. And continually trying to invent and attend to those processes. And I know that's something that we're very active here at AUM doing. Common reading programs, that's a great example of what a lot of institutions are doing. Students are expected, and faculty also, to read a specific book, whatever the university chooses. And then you take the content from in that book and throughout the academic year, pull concepts, contents from that book into what's going on campus. So everybody has the opportunity to talk about these issues. A student sitting next to a faculty member, sitting next to the chancellor, the three of them can have a conversation about the concepts within that book in meaningful ways. And they're all kind of on a level playing field in the sense that they've all have this shared experience. That creates a sense of community. That creates a sense of validation in the student. That creates then a willingness to engage and learn. So those are ways to do that. And I think that all of that is critically important, because if you provide that opportunity for students to feel safe in exploring, they then are going to be able and be willing to take the risks needed to find out and connect with themselves and what it is that they're doing with that, and what it, why it is that they are working and what they're trying to do. And that's where the inspiration comes from. When you provide a student an opportunity to stop and reflect and engage in what they're learning in a way that's meaningful to them, wow, that's powerful.
It's going to turn on all sorts of energy. And,
right.
Yeah. What are you finding in, you know, in part of your role includes the getting students to AUM in the first place and recruitment. But, you know, it's a hard task, in effect, to say, and so this is a two-pointed question, that it's a hard task to say you're going to come here and work differently than you ever have before. You're going to engage differently. This is going to be challenging to you in a lot of ways that you haven't been challenged before. And secondly, what is AUM doing, or what are you doing, and what is the university system there in Alabama doing to work with the public school system, secondary ed systems in Alabama, to help that transition happen, and to help students be prepared at a higher level for the type of work and curiosity and preparation for engagement that they're going to be offered at AUM.
Sure. There are a lot to. I'll cover the second piece first. There are a lot of things, because as soon as you're talking, I'm like, oh, wait, this and this and this. But there are a lot of ways that I think higher ed in general, but specifically here at AUM and at Auburn, where we do outreach with the community. So there are opportunities where we go into the community, and that can be providing information sessions on how to complete a financial aid form. That's happening all over the country. So, you know, parents, if you're looking for that kind of information, tap into what's going on at the university, and you're going to find that people are out, institutions are out, providing information on how to apply for scholarships, where to apply for scholarships, but then also providing opportunities for teachers, K-12, continuing education units to have some, you know, conversations about this is what we're expecting of our students. This is what our faculty are expecting of our students, and you know, to help them, you know, reiterate and to understand this is how higher ed is changing a little bit, you know, just as the K-12 system is changing, and to have those conversations so that. And I think some states are doing a fantastic job of really kind of creating a K-16 model as opposed to a K-12 model, where you can really, there are a lot of conversations in prepping. Within school districts, you have that. You know, the middle school knows what the high school needs. The high school is helping the middle school, you know. And we need to create that, again, that's part of this access piece. We need to be able to create those bridges from post-secondary. I am not aware to the degree of that it's happening in Alabama to the degree that I've seen in other states. I'm not personally involved with that. But I have to say it may be. I have only been working in Alabama for 2 years, so I've really been focused on AUM and Auburn specifically. So I don't have that that experience. So I don't want to say it's not happening when it may actually be happening. But there are a lot of ways, you know, like I had mentioned earlier, the Common Reading Program. Here's a very specific example. We have a Common Read. AUM Connected is our Common Reading Program at AUM. We offer opportunities for local high schools to where we'll purchase the books for different English courses or different leadership groups in the local high schools to say, here are the here's the books that we're reading, and then invite those students to our events on campus. Our AUM Connected program is open to the entire community. So high school students who are getting ready for college, parents who are, you know, trying to prep to figure out how they can support their students as they get ready for college, everyone's welcome to come to our presentations, to come to those events, and to see what that college environment is like. So in that sense, there are a lot of things kind of overlapping. Does that address your question that you
asked? Yeah, I'm also, I guess, more particularly thinking about the movement to the critical thinking. So much of the standardized testing seems to be teaching to find what is the right answer, rather than the deeper question that I love to engage students in is there's not a right answer.
Right.
What's the questions? Where's your curiosity? Where's your passion? Or what aspect of this topic can you get excited about and engaged in?
Sure.
And I don't
think
find,
that,
you know, and that shift from here in North Carolina, I can say that in 12 years of teaching, or 9 years of teaching here at Appalachian, that first semester and making that shift for students is a really rough transition because they have been taught to find what is the right answer and trained to that rather than, and here we are suddenly saying, it's not about, that could be the right answer, maybe.
Right.
But what's the deeper
question?
That's
one of the right answers. Right.
Exactly.
That's one way to look at
and
it.
And they go,
yeah.
What?
Yes. I mean, you're speaking to what my students experienced on Wednesday in class. And at one point in time, they were all just looking at me with this absolute disgust. And that's that moment of, it's got to be okay that they don't like me at that moment.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, and it's hard. And I think that's the other piece, too, is there's some recognition of, it isn't easy. It's simple, but it's not easy. You know,
right.
It's simple to say, stop and reflect, stop and connect. But again,
yeah.
That goes back to what I was speaking earlier of, we have to provide them the space to be able to do that. And
yeah.
I think, and this is why we have just this past year, specifically at AUM, incorporated a University 1000 course into our curriculum. And every
uh-huh.
individual starting this last fall, it's mandated. They have to take that course and pass it with a minimum of a C or better in order to continue moving on at AUM and continue their enrollment. And it's a graduation requirement. So,
mm-hmm.
again, you know, coming from the concept of students don't do optional. I would go even further to say, as human beings, we don't do optional. But we're mandating
mm-hmm.
that students have, during their first year, a class that is providing them the opportunity to transition from what is the right answer to what are your options and what is the meaning of this to you. And what
yeah.
and where is yeah, and where is this taking you? Because unfortunately, a lot of the first year type classes, the intro classes for the liberal arts program,
mm-hmm.
a lot of them still come down to what is the right answer, correct? It's basic
mm-hmm.
knowledge. So our
mm-hmm.
intention is to provide students, while they're still taking an introduction to psychology class, which, you know, may then have the multiple choice type, it's a right answer, kind of
right.
a response to it, while they're still learning basic knowledge that's critical that they'll build upon for later, we are simultaneously providing them with an opportunity to really start struggling with the process of, this is true learning, this is critical thinking. We cannot, as higher ed, expect our students to come in having critical thinking skills. If they already had the critical thinking skills, if they already knew how to problem solve, if they already had all of those skills and abilities, then do they really need us?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's critically important for faculty to remember that, yes, content is important, and that's where we're going with this, but the bigger picture is developing these young adults to be independent professionals in more ways than just content, but in the skills, the associated skills. So when we go back to
Go ahead.
I was going to say, like, your original question in how do you tell students this, like, with admissions, how do you, you know, excite them about that? To be honest, students want that. Students want to be challenged.
Yeah.
Students are excited to learn. I think it's a matter of how we deliver that as to whether or not they maintain that excitement. They have no idea how hard it's going to be. I'll say that.
Right.
They don't understand the challenge, and it's not, you know, the physical challenge so much as just the psychological challenge, the breaking down and building up a new paradigm, all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But they're excited because they're like, oh, I get to do this on my own. I get to really wrestle with it on my own. Students are excited. I think it's an
mm-hmm.
innate thing. It's a matter of how we present it.
Mm-hmm. In your experience, what are some of the things that college, we talked about what the university can offer, what other institutions can offer and the support that's there, but what can students themselves who might be listening, what can they do to make the most out of college?
There are a few things. One is really to get engaged. You need to connect with your university or your college. This is not an option. You know, go to class. Yes, I want you to have fun, but you need to go to class. And when you're in class, don't just sit there and fall asleep. Go to class and engage. Ask questions. Talk about this with my students. You need to speak up and speak out. And you need to practice those skills of what it takes to do that. So you need to be willing to ask questions. Get engaged with your content, get engaged with your environment, and get engaged with the people around you. Do not allow yourself to be alone. College can be very much a time when you're amidst a sea of people and you feel completely alone. The students have the responsibility to reach out and connect with someone somewhere somehow. And if you don't know exactly how to do that, start with somebody that's a formal process. You know, whether that be your academic advisor. You don't have to be an extrovert to get engaged with student affairs and the extracurricular campus activities. You don't have to be an athlete to go and be engaged and be a supporter of the athletics that's going on your campus. And you don't have to be in the jazz band. You don't have to, but you need to find your place on that campus and connect. So I think that's really, I am a firm believer in the challenge, support, and engage. Students need to seek challenges. They need to seek the support of people that are going to help them to engage in this process. And if they are engaged, if they connect, then, you know, that's the big picture thing. They need to keep a calendar, yes. Do they need to know how to study? Yes. I mean, those are kind of some of the given things that I would say.
The basics, yeah.
The basics that you expect. But students, do what you have in your power. Find one or two people on your campus and connect with them. Get to know them and seek their advice. Be willing to be mentored. That's not easy for some folks.
Mm-hmm.
Be willing to be mentored. Be willing to face the intimidation factor a little bit, if you will, and connect with folks. And it will be you'll be amazed. Who you know, it really does matter. It matters in how you feel about yourself, and it matters in the opportunities that are there for you.
Great. This is something you mentioned earlier. My guest is Lisa Kerr, who we've just had a wonderful almost hour. It's gone quickly, talking about college students from the perspective of an associate dean for enrollment. And this has been an excellent conversation about what the institutions are trying to do, institutions such as Auburn, University of Montgomery, but around the country, and also what students that getting engaged and connecting are so important. Lastly, what can parents do? Parents who are helping to prepare their students for college, but also once their students are in college. You mentioned this earlier about the challenge with the connectivity of parents hanging back letting students fall and tumble and fail and, you know, that experimentation you were talking about. But what else can parents do?
I think prior to students getting to school and leaving the nest, so to speak, to go to college, be open and honest with them. Continue to help them understand their values and help them to identify their values and what they view. If you, as a parent, know that you've done your job and that your student, your child, is grounded in their values and they understand what's important, reiterate those. Above all, have the confidence that you've done a good job parenting and trust your student and build that relationship to where if the student gets in over their head, you know they're going to come and talk to you. Again, creating that safe space where they're going to feel uncomfortable coming to you and asking those questions. It's really important that transition from being the parent, and I can't say this from experience because my children are still young, but what I see being very successful is parents who transition from being the parent and telling their students and their children what to do to being the parent as an advisor and as a resource for their student. That's really magical and very beautiful to see that transpire. But really, beforehand, be very real and honest with, these are the things I'm worried about you having to deal with. These are our values. Remember them. And if you forget them, know that you can come and talk to me about the values that I want for you. Help the students learn to set goals, first off. Like, help them set goals. But in that process, let them be the ones to set the goals. Help them learn how to set goals. Help them understand why they're setting goals, when to set goals. If you can help your child understand that they're grounded in a set of values and help them to understand how to set goals, you have given your child skills for the lifetime and for that experience. And then really, honestly, when they go, cut them some slack. Find ways through the university to stay engaged and to know what's going on so you can support them in ways and you can know a little bit about them, but allow them to really spread their wings. The university, we really strive to create safe spaces for students. So try to be trustful in that we are doing our best to take care of those babies you've raised, but also provide them the opportunity to engage in that and to work through the processes of becoming an adult, kind of on their own.
And so, you know, screwing up sometimes.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, and along that process is if you've helped your child learn self-awareness, how to set goals, what their values are, they're going to have the ability to pick themselves up after they mess up. We have to allow – I learn from my failures and my mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
They're not easy. I don't, you know, I'm not going to say that, oh, it's all, you know, roses. But we learn from those and we remember those lessons. So, again, as long as they're recoverable, let the mistakes happen.
Yeah. And the whole laboratory mindset is a very helpful image for what colleges and universities can be, that it is in effect a safe laboratory for life and for learning, growing, becoming who these young adults are and the amazing people that they are. I know I feel like it's such a privilege to be able to work with these young adults and to be a teacher, be a coach, to be working with the students that I get to work with. And I hear that in you. We're coming to an end of a great conversation.
Yeah, that was fast.
Lisa, thank you so much. Any final thoughts or comments that you have on the topics that we've covered? Any thoughts about resiliency, about retention, about these key issues and what students can do, what the universities can do, what the parents can do?
I think my final statement would – that's a lot. That's a big question. You can't ask me that question and then give me 30 seconds.
I'm sorry.
But in all sincerity, I guess to the students, my statement is, you know, be excited. Come with your eyes wide open. Be ready to really embrace a challenge and know that you're not doing it on your own. To the parents, really right now, allow your children to make mistakes at home, but require them to clean up their own messes. Make sure that you're helping them to be honest and real with the values and the expectations you set and help them to learn how to set goals. And for everyone involved, remember that learning is a process. It's not a product. Education is a process. The degree is the end outcome. And when we talk about student success versus retention, student success is the process. Retention is the byproduct of the student being successful. A student will persist if they feel connected and engaged. So students, get engaged. Connect. Know you're not alone out here, but own it. It is your responsibility to be successful. And, you know, parents also know that higher ed institutions truly have your best interest and your students' best interest at heart. And we are here to help them identify and actualize their potential. With all the craziness going on in the world, it's real easy to think, oh my gosh, where are we headed? But then I come to work and I see the excitement and the dreams alive in our future leaders, and it makes me be able to sleep at night. So, I mean, that's a lot to say, but really, engagement is key.
Excellent.
Engagement is key.
Yeah. Lisa, thank you so much. It's been such a joy having you as a guest on this show today. Our look forward to our work together, and really want to say thank you for this conversation. I think it's been a really helpful conversation, and I hope those who listen to it in the archive version, as well as perhaps those who were listening live, really enjoyed the conversation as much as I did. Again, this has been College Life Engagement Coaching on the Life Coach Radio Network. My name is Tommy Brown. I can be reached at tommy@collegelifeengagement.com, or my phone number is 828-719-8741. And if you're interested in coaching for your student, or if you're a parent who needs coaching about how to be with your student and how to help your student most successfully during college, that's what we're here for, and we'd love to talk to you. Again, Lisa, thank you so much. Wonderful show, and look forward to everybody have a wonderful day. Blessings.